You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Available now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite bookseller. Publishers Weekly calls Get Scrappy a helpful digital marketing Bible. You can read the first chapter, get special digital extras, and learn more now at GetScrappyBook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Anne Handley. Anne is a Wall Street Journal best-selling author, keynote speaker, and the world's first chief content officer. Anne speaks and writes about how you can rethink the way your business markets. Cited in Forbes as the most influential woman in social media and recognized by Forbes Woman as one of the top 20 women bloggers, Anne Handley is the chief content officer of Marketing Profs, a training and education company with the largest community of marketers in its category. She was a longtime monthly columnist for Entrepreneur Magazine, is a member of the LinkedIn Influencer Program, and the co-author of the best-selling book on content marketing, Content Rules, How to Create Killer Blog Posts. I will do this. Content Rules, How to Create Killer Blogs, Podcasts, Videos, eBooks, Webinars, and More that Engage Customers and Ignite Your Business. The book has been translated into 9 languages, including Turkish, Chinese, Japanese, Korean, Italian, Portuguese. Her most recent book, Everybody Writes, Your Go-To Guide to Creating Ridiculously Good Content, is a Wall Street Journal bestseller. She currently has more than 350,000 followers on Twitter and writes about content, marketing, and life at the highly entertaining AnneHandley.com. A pioneer in digital marketing, Anne is the co-founder of ClickZee, which was one of the first sources of interactive marketing news and commentary. She started her business career as a business journalist and editor. Anne, welcome to On Brand.
Wow. You know, my big takeaway from that introduction, I got to shorten that bio.
Just as I was reading it, I was thinking, was there a short bio I missed? Sometimes there's both. And then I've gotten into trouble when I realize, because of my own sloppiness, that I should have tried to, you know, maybe I could make a short bio. And then I've tried to do it up as I'm speaking. Mm. And as we saw or heard, rather, that I couldn't even make it through the subtitle of Content Rules, it's not a great idea to edit on the fly whilst speaking.
So here's a fun fact. I still do not know by heart the subtitle of Content Rules. I always have to refer to the actual book to get it right. So my big takeaway from that is don't have a long subtitle. That's difficult to remember.
Well, and say you even got the stuff. I mean, getting them in order, too.
I know. I got blogs, and then I just fall apart after that. So I sort of giggled when you stumbled, because I stumble every single time.
Well, you know, then since we've talked about it, since we've made it a thing, I normally would have gone in and carefully removed my stumble, but now it's a thing. It's a go.
No, now it's a thing. That's how you know it's live radio, folks.
Right. There's some way to make that about marketing today. Yes?
I think so. Yeah.
We're rolling with our mistakes.
Warts and all marketing. That's what I call it.
Warts and all marketing. So I love your background that I always forget about. And a great thing that is in the bio there at the end is starting your career as a journalist and editor. And, you know, when you talked initially about what are we going to talk about, and I talked about looking at things through the branding lens, you know, it seems like the trite advice to everyone is writing skills. Make sure you're a good writer. If you're a writer, you can do anything. But I think that that's more, we've been saying that before all of this, before everything that is in the subtitle of content rules.
Mm-hmm.
But what is the what is the new bigger mandate for writing today?
What's the bigger mandate for writing?
Why does it matter more? Feels like it does.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it does. I mean, I think it always has, but I think the tendency in marketing today is to think, you know, in the era of live Facebook video, live social video, in the era of tweets and infographics and podcasts like this one, to discount the value of writing. But my belief is that writing does matter. It matters now more than it ever has, precisely for that reason. You know, in a world where there is so much noise, there is so much content being created, there is so much stuff out there, you know, the only way to break through in my mind is to have clear empathy for the person you're trying to reach, for your audience. And then if you have their attention, to not waste their time to you know, get your message out in as clear and succinct and as useful a manner as possible. And so in my mind, you know, that has a direct link to writing. If you think about a lot of the content assets out there, like infographics, like videos, even, you know, even the text that's going to appear around this podcast when it ultimately appears on your site, you know, those are all, that's all words. That's all writing. I still think that words are the backbone of the internet. I think they always will be.
You know, we talk about, you know, the increase in the amount of content, and we talk about needing to write more across all formats. This year at the Social Brand Forum, when we were talking about panels and interviewing beforehand, I actually moderated a panel with Andy Crestidina and Joe Polizzi on the future of content. And Joe said something interesting that, you know, it's one of those things that you write down and you're like, I think I know what that means, but I want to take that apart more. He talked about beyond just needing more writers, more content creators. He talked about needing more content editors.
See, Joe and I are so often on the same page. This has been a key talking point for me for years. I remember I had a conversation not too long ago, maybe a year or so ago, with a big brand that we both know who's in the marketing space, who publishes a lot of content on a regular basis. You could say that they're even a hub for some people who rely on their content. It's their go-to spot in a way. So one of the things that came out of that conversation was that this brand, who of course, you know, shall remain nameless.
Absolutely.
Did not have, at the time anyway, did not have a single editor on staff, which I thought was amazing. It just blew me away in the worst possible way. It wasn't like amazing. You know, I was viewing a unicorn jumping over a rainbow amazing. It was, are you kidding me? Amazing. So it was almost terrifying to me to think about that an organization that had such an ambitious publishing program did not have a single editor for all the writers and all the content creators that they had. And so, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think editing is completely key. And I think it's a different skill set too. You know, a lot of times people will say, oh, well, you know, we have editors and writers as if they are one and the same. But actually editors, you know, the skill of editing, I think, is a very different skill set than writing. And in my experience, most writers that I know, most good writers are not good editors. You know, like in a Venn diagram of great writers and great editors, there's no overlap. Like there's no touch point. And so I think that those two skills are different. And I think a great publishing program, you know, this is true whether you're an actual, you know, publication, you know, a traditional publication or whether you're a brand, I think editors are incredibly important. Actually, Andy Crestidina just came out, speaking of Andy, or will be coming out. I'm not sure when you're going to publish this podcast, but he just came out with a bit of research where he surveyed about 1,000 bloggers / writers / content creators. And he did find that the instance of editors is definitely on the upswing. More and more brands, more and more companies, more and more individuals are using editors. And I was like, no, like, hallelujah. Thank God.
That's great. This will actually go up Monday, here at the 31st here.
Oh, this is a Halloween episode?
This is the Halloween. It's the ghoulish.
Why didn't you tell me that?
Well, you're in costume. I mean, I knew that already. So that's
always in costume.
But at the Social Brand Forum, we actually, Andy shared that link to the survey. So we will definitely link to the results because I know a lot of folks listening and that were there participated in that. So that will be good to see. I love that you pointed out that most writers are not great editors because I do think, you know, you talk about all the different skills as businesses are all of a sudden in the content business. I think that a stereotype, you know, all the ways that businesses don't think like publishers. I think that's one critical misstep too, is that, you can have someone that writes it. And as long as some other writer type person reads through it, you've got the editing thing covered.
Yeah, right. I think that helps. Certainly. I guess depending on your budget, there are many ways to think about hiring a quote unquote editor. Certainly peer editing is, as you were just alluding to, I think that's one way to cover it. It's not perfect, but it's better than having nobody at all. You can also look at tools like the Hemingway app is one of my favorites. I always run everything that I write through the Hemingway app. Do you use that?
You know, I don't, but I've heard enough about it. There's not a good excuse for me to.
Yeah, it's great. Another one is Grammarly, very similar to Hemingway app. What both of those tools allow you to do is you can just go to either the website or the app. You can plug in your piece of text and it'll spit out, you know, this is a problematic phrasing. You know, this is awkward. Too many adjectives, too many adverbs, you know, whatever. It sort of is another pair of quote unquote eyes, robot eyes, but eyes
robot
on
eyes.
On your text. So it's an awesome tool to use. I use that as kind of a first pass before I send it through an actual human editor, which in my mind is really the best kind of editor. It's actually have somebody who you know, who you work with, who is, you know, a professional editor essentially. But given that a lot of, especially smaller companies, that may not be in the budget, at the very least, you should look at peer editing and you should look at some of those tools that I just mentioned. And by the way, you know, why do I think that editing is so important? It's because the editor is really the proxy for the audience. You know, I think it's really hard as a writer to play both roles, to, you know, say what you want to say, say it in a way that you think is compelling and artful and engaging, and then also, you know, swap places with yourself essentially and become an editor. I think you can do that if you give some put some time in between, like, you know, preferably like a day. I think you can, you know, act as that, but still, you know, the value of an editor, I just think cannot be understated because they truly do represent the audience. You know, they're the people, the individuals who can look at your piece of writing and say, this is really clear. You know, this isn't clear. The editor that I work with all the time is somebody who does that for me. You know, very often I'll have checked all the boxes. You know, I'll edit myself. I'll run it through Hemingway app and then I'll send it to him and he'll be like, I don't understand what this means. And I'm like, what do you mean? It's crystal clear. But then when I look at it from his point of view, it's like, I guess that is a little murky. So I think we need to clear that up.
So speaking of editing, you know, I think to some, I was going to say to some just tuning in, like it's the radio, like we were on the dial. For those just tuning in, my guest is Ann Handley. No, but for those, you know, it might seem like, as opposed to talking about things of a branding nature that we're doing a deep dive on writing, I do think, especially when you talk about writing and editing and the role of editing and, you know, it, you know, kind of being the, you know, the advocate for the audience, the role of the editor there. Do you think that editing, which in turn produces better writing, better content that fits the audience better, is that going to, I think that has a real obvious impact on the content that you're creating as a brand too?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, because the editor is an advocate for the audience, essentially. You know, the editor's job is really to work for the audience, right? To work for the reader. So because of that, I think it automatically will up the quality of the content that you're producing. But I was just struck by something actually when you were talking about, you know, this is a podcast about branding.
It is. Right? It is.
It's about And so, you know, where I think that writing and words and editing and all of those things, like I think the place where it touches branding most significantly is also the place where there's the most opportunity for companies in their marketing is in the notion of tone of voice. I talk about tone of voice a lot. I have talked about tone of voice quite a bit since Everybody Writes came out. I think it's vastly undervalued as a branding tool by brands. A lot of brands, and you know this better than anybody, Nick, you know, they spend a lot of time looking at the visual components of how they're representing their products and services. They spend vastly fewer minutes looking at how they sound. So what do I mean by tone of voice? It's, you know, it's how you are representing your company. It's how you sound, essentially, when you read your copy and your content out loud.
You know, that's really interesting. And I love talking about brand voice. And I think that I always say that branding to people gets kind of squishy. It's kind of the hippy-dippy stuff. Yeah. And I would almost say that, like, brand voice could be to some not having trouble getting their arms around it. It could seem like one of the squishiest aspects of, well, what do you mean? How's my brand sound? But you know, I know that I think I'm not making this up. But you know, when we've worked on things together, and you've talked about things that are the marketing prof's voice. So what does that mean? Whether it's marketing prof's, how does that come to bear with the actual work of writing?
Yeah, I mean, I think you raise a really good point. Voice, I mean, branding sounds high-minded, but I think voice sounds even more high-minded.
Come on.
I know. I mean, I think most of us associate with voice with the literary world rather than the business world. But like I said, tone of voice really just refers to how you sound in your writing. And like I also said, in marketing, I think that your tone of voice can be a significant differentiator. The challenge that I always put to brands and to companies is to say, like, mask the logo on your own site, mask any visual identifiers on your site, on your social channels, on your blogs, on everything, and then read just the words, you know, say just the words. Do you sound different? Do you sound unique? Or do you sound like everybody else, potentially? Do you sound like your competitors? And I think that's a really powerful exercise to go through, especially if you are trying to work with a client or the C-suite, who may be thinking, like you just mentioned, that's a little, why do we need that for? That's a little hippy-dippy. But that
these
was
are,
me
these are things
being
that
you.
These are things that actual executives say. They immediately do a chipmunk-like voice.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way to think about your tone of voice is to think of it in terms of, if the label fell off, if your branding fell off, if your visual identifiers fell off, would people know it was you? I think that can be a really powerful exercise to take your client or your boss or your CEO through.
So is that also a role of the editor? Voice?
Yes. I mean, I think, well, first of all, that to me, ultimately voice will come from, you know, who you are. And so I think that needs to be set ahead of time. It's who you are. It's why you do what you do. And it also can broadcast kind of what you are like to deal with. So I think there are components of voice that really does need to be set by the folks who are talking about branding, so within the marketing department. But then it should be communicated through some sort of style guide, which ideally the writer will be familiar with, so that they'll know whether they're using, you know, the company believes or we believe. You know, it's what words are they using? How are they communicating? So it definitely affects the writing. And then it will also be on the desk of the editor, who is well aware of this too. So there's no one place where it applies. I think it cascades throughout the various roles and throughout the various functions.
Well, in style guide, it's funny because that's another place where I think in the brand context where we've gotten kind of visually stereotyped. Mm-hmm. Oh, the style guide, that has how many pixels of clearance the logo needs when it's sitting somewhere. And at best, you get a couple of, you know, general adjectives tossed in about what kind of how you sound every now and then.
Yes, yes, exactly. I also think that I wish there was a better word for the word style guide, because in a lot of ways, I think it automatically shuts people off before they even think about what it is. It is one of those documents or functions, I guess, that feels kind of, I don't know, impenetrable maybe, or pedantic, just sort of like not very useful. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you remind me, I had on earlier in the year, and I need to follow up because they were working on it at the time, Sean Blankenship, he's chief marketing officer at Coldwell Banker, but they were working on something that they were calling a brand storybook that was a little more focused on the how their story is told, which I thought was... Mm-hmm. An interesting construct, and then also when you think about the number of people that they, as you know, having thousands of independent brokers helping them build their brand, talk about probably needing an editor.
Yeah, right. Right. I think that makes a lot of sense. I also like our friends at Uberflip. Uberflip is a content marketing platform, and anybody who wants to dig into a brand style guide that does not feel pedantic and impenetrable, I think go to styleguide.uberflip.com, see what these guys have done. They're a B2B company, but they have lots of great insight into, you know, for writers and editors who are creating content on behalf of Uberflip. How do we actually do this? What do we sound like? What's our mission? What's our tone of voice? How should we be communicating? What are some of the words? They call them Uberflippinese, but, you know, in any other industry, it would just be jargon. You know, what's the jargon that we do use? So it's a great model for any brand to follow. But what I really like about it is that it's public. Why is that so exciting to me? Because it makes everyone at Uberflip accountable, number one. And number two, it's visible. Like, I think I talked to a lot of companies who are like, oh yeah, we've got that brand style guide thingy thing. Is it, Jim, did you have that back in your office? You know, it's like, it's not accessible. People don't really know where it is. I think it's incumbent on the company. If you're going to make brand voice a differentiator, you got to make it someplace accessible. And you've also got to just make it something that people can access, you know, very easily and that they want to access.
Well, and that gets back to our other challenge too. We've gotten into, you know, everybody's gotten the message about all of the content we need. We've cranked up the content engines, and say our totally random example of a brand that is a spot of a hub that that was decidedly unnuanced. Say you're, but you've got so much content being created. How do you have any hope of it being consistent? It wouldn't pass any of the tests. I mean, that you were talking about. If there's no general rules, general guidelines for what you sound like.
Right, exactly. And I think that's the beauty of a style guide. You know, a style guide is not really meant to be, you know, an iron fist. It's really meant to be like bumpers on a bowling lane that basically keeps everybody kind of in the middle. The goal for any company is never to make everybody sound the same, but really to allow people to express themselves through the content in their individual voices, but at the same time within some guidelines. So that's why I like the analogy of bumpers on a bowling lane, because in my mind, it's a very visual analogy, and it really perfectly illustrates the beauty of relying on something like a style guide.
I love that, the bumpers on the bowling lane. But because I do think that's one concern, that I think the other bad stereotype that we have is that it's the I hate even saying it, the brand police.
Yeah, exactly.
They're going to come after us. They're going to stop all the really interesting stuff that we're doing. And going with the bumpers. But I also think that, you know, through everything that we're talking about and all of the content that we're creating, it's one of those things that sounds trite, but I think we're to this point where it's not just about more content, that it's better content. And it's usually a good line when you're speaking, but I think it does invite the follow-up question of, okay, so how? And I think that everything you're talking about here, something that has a unique sound to it, but also fits the audience a little bit better. I mean, I think there's so much Me Too content out there. And if we don't stop, and look around and take a deep breath. We're just ending up kind of creating content for the sake of content.
Right, right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I feel like you just articulated the issue that I feel like I have spent the last 5 years of my life, that I've dedicated the last 5 years of my life to. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Well, you know, I think we talked about it in the hall of your of the Prof's B2B forum is, mm-hmm. you know, because I've, you know, video's so big, and I'm sitting here as a personal brand myself thinking, oh, I'm not doing anything with video. I'm like, but we have all this guilt with it too. You know, it's great for how anxious and guilt ridden we all are anyways. But we turn all of those feelings into like content shame. Oh, I'm not doing something with that. And it's like, maybe I'm not a video brand. I've got a podcast, I've got a blog, you know, maybe that's enough. I'm being my own content therapist. So
yeah, no, I like the way that you're actually playing both sides of it here. I'm just going to sit back. No, I think, by the way, that you should start a new podcast called Content Shame, content. Things you're not doing.
Oh.
Ways you're disappointing your own company.
I know. There's
that's fantastic.
runs to buy URL. And then I just have shame about after a few episodes about just dropping off of the Content Shame podcast. I couldn't keep it going. Even that. Damn it.
Oh, that's funny.
So you also, your talk about at Content Marketing World, I think we're drifting close to as well, and talking about slow marketing, mm-hmm. and slow content. What do you, does it involve a crock pot?
That's really funny.
I just looked at some of the pictures from the deck, so I'm honestly not sure.
No, it does not involve a crock pot, although I think that is a fantastic idea. So I might have to look into that. What I'm talking about slow marketing, essentially what I'm talking about is that I think as companies, you know, as individuals, we are a very impatient industry. Marketing is very impatient. We're always looking for more. We're always looking for more leads or more social shares or more awareness, more brand recognition, more pipeline, more funnel, more credit. I mean, more everything. But I think that ultimately, I believe in the concept of slow marketing, which means that companies who ultimately will have the biggest marketing wins, you know, this fall and going into next year as well, don't get there by going faster and looking for more and more. Instead, I think they get there by thinking more strategically and slowing down. So the notion of slow marketing is really about the value of slowing down at specific moments to think about things more carefully, more consistently, so that you can cover the strategic important questions, that you can answer those important questions to perhaps go faster later on. So conventional wisdom is that, you know, if you slow down, you're roadkill, you know, that we can't go slow because, you know, time is money, as Ben Franklin famously said. But I think that the opposite turns out to be true. I do think that there is such a good thing as slow. I think there's a bad slow for sure, but there's also a critical need for a good slow. And so that's really what I talked about at Content Marketing World and where I'm focusing a lot of my energy into the new year, in 2017.
Well, that's really an attention-getting idea too, because like you said, with as fast as technology's moving, as fast as mm-hmm. media's moving, it's like it's this this speeding highway that we're supposed to merge onto.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, you know, you've got some of the platforms that are like, just push the red button, just go live, just record it, just all of the stuff that Content Shame Guy was feeling bad about. And
right.
Yeah, I think that is good advice that is not out there in a lot of places.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm not saying that we need to slow marketing down across the board. Our world moves way too fast for that. And this is also not an anti-technology message. I'm a big believer in using the right tools and the right technology in marketing. What this is a plea for is doing some necessary slow things first, and laying the groundwork so that later on we can move fast. What that slow thing that you need to do in your own company is going to vary depending on who you are. But, you know, tone of voice, for example, is a classic example of a need to slow down before you can move fast. If you spend the time, invest the time, if you slow down your content program to hone that tone of voice, to figure out who we are, what we're like to deal with, and to make sure that tone of voice really matches that on the brand side, then ultimately I think your content will be that much more effective. The idea of slow marketing isn't just a content marketing play. I think it transcends content marketing. It transcends marketing in a lot of ways. But, you know, fundamentally, I think it can apply across the organization in various areas. And that's exactly what I'm kind of researching now. And I'm trying to unearth these stories. You know, when is it important to slow down? Because, again, the idea is not to slow down across the board. I'm not saying, you know, we should stop, go back to wearing buckled shoes and have buttons on instead of zippers on our clothing. You know, we should take it back. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that I think marketing has been progressing at such a breakneck speed that it's the wrong path to follow. I think we need to slow down and pull over for a little bit, slow down to speed up at a more sustainable rate.
Got it. So Ann Handley says we should stop marketing. If you're just tuning in, Handley hates technology, thinks we should stop marketing.
I love it.
Oh, well, that will at least help me overcome some of my own content shame. So as we start to wrap things up, Ann, what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
Ooh. That's a good question. You know, my go-to brand for that always makes me smile is Freaker USA. And Freaker USA, if you've heard me speak in the last year or so, you've probably heard me talk about them. They are a drink insulator company. They manufacture and sell one-size-fits-all beverage insulators, also known as can koozies or cozies in Australia. Why I love this company is that beverage insulation is not a hot category by any stretch, but Freaker USA really stands out because it's a little bit kooky. The company is a little bit kooky. Their marketing is fantastic. They use their tone of voice to such a great degree to really differentiate their product. And I love them so much. They make me smile every single Friday when I get an email from them. I just got one earlier today. I love their social channels. I love their everything about them. Their newsletter, their website, everything. It's just amazing.
That is awesome. And where should we send folks to learn more about who you are and what you do?
You can find me at annhandley.com, which is my personal website. I talk about marketing there, although I have not posted there in a while because I've been super distracted with our B2B forum, which
content
you just mentioned.
Shame.
Yeah, content shame, exactly.
Shame.
This is a theme, isn't it? Or you can find me at marketingpros.com. We offer all kinds of training and education programs for marketers of all sizes.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Anne, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Thank you so much for having me.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Recently, Anna Juncker gave both Anne and I a shout out on Twitters with copies of both Get Scrappy and Everybody Writes in her reading stack. And it is also of note that Anne wrote the foreword for Get Scrappy. Regardless, Anna, thank you for the great shelfie featuring our books. And if you liked something that you heard on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. You can find links to everything that we talked about over at BrandDrivenDigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Remember, On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small, featuring that foreword by Anne Handley. Order now at Amazon and check out GetScrappyBook.com for special offers and extras. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.